Joining me now is the, in the absence of Peter Dutton, acting opposition leader Susan Lee, who's on the phone. Good morning, Susan, and thank you very much for your time this morning.
It's a pleasure.
One of the hot topics, obviously, is this change in bulk billing incentives. You had a bit to say, and you pointed out yesterday that the bulk billing rates have decreased dramatically over time, and certainly under the present government. GPs, their advice to doctors from the AMA is increased fees. I think it's $100 now if you're not going to a bulk billed GP. But surely this is a good move, this extra incentive, particularly if you're reading some either under the age of 16 or receiving a government concession?
It's a bulk billing incentive, Richard, which means that doctors can choose to take it up or not take it up. And I don't see any indication that we're going to have bulk billed patients increase. And I'm not going to hear, I know, from people who say it's cheaper to go and see a doctor. Unfortunately, everything that the doctors are saying at the moment is pointing to price increases. And of course, that leads to the cost of living increases across the country that are being experienced by medical practices and everyone else along the way. So, it does link back to a government that doesn't have a plan to actually get doctors to our regions, keep prices reasonable, and keep everyone's cost of living reasonable.
Yeah, well, all right, your electorate of Farah is mainly regional and rural, and surely many people in your electorate are going to benefit. I mean, the bulk billing incentive for doctors has gone from, what, $13.15 to almost $40 if you're with a Commonwealth concession card or under the age of 16. Surely more doctors will bulk bill if your incentive it triples effectively.
For some patients, but not for all. So for concession card holders, both under 16 and pensioners, doctors may choose to take up this bulk billing incentive. For everyone else, nothing changes. And I come back to the first point, Richard, which is that they can still charge their normal fees and not take up this incentive because the numbers won't stack up for them. And every medical practice has to work those numbers through because they're facing this overwhelming increase in costs. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen such a jump in the cost to see a doctor. And when you're looking at $100 as being forecast to be just a normal cost for a working family, that's pretty scary when you add that to the other cost of living issues that people are facing right now. So it seems to me like throwing money at the wrong part of the problem, but not actually designing a solution that makes going to the doctor more affordable for families.
My guest is Acting Opposition Leader Susan Lee. You will be in the Hunter today. What's the purpose of your visit?
I'm looking forward to meeting BHP at one of their open-cut coal mines. I'm going to be talking about energy. I want to reassure those who work in this region that the energy jobs that they do right now matter to the economy. They are terrific for our region and for Australia. Of course, everyone is interested and wants to see that transition to clean green energy, but what we've always said as an opposition is you have to do that in a way that keeps baseload power affordable, that doesn't crash the local economy, that doesn't make the cost of energy for manufacturing and businesses so expensive that they go out of business, and so on. So, the Prime Minister's overseas, we hope he does well, but we're here on the ground listening to local communities and working out how we can be here for them through the tough times ahead and reassuring them that we believe in the jobs that they do.
Well, focusing on the transition to renewables, consultation has been a hot topic. Peter Dutton's been here twice in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I've spoken to him on both occasions, read the consultation about this proposed offshore wind zone, which a lot of the locals up around Port Stephens aren't happy about. And I noticed too now that the National Farmers Federation have a new president. Under the previous regime, they were very supportive of the move to zero emissions by 2050. But I think now the new president is saying on behalf of the National Farmers Federation, hang on a moment, these large renewable projects aren't on the grid. This transition to renewables is going to mean transmission lines crisscrossing the country all over the place, and I think a lot of farmers and certainly many in your electorate wouldn't be too happy about that. Do you think there has been a lack of consultation?
Totally a lack of consultation. So I represent areas where they're putting up these massive overhead transmission lines, which are each pylon the size of the Sydney Harbour Bridge pylon, so you get a sense of how big they are. But, you know, off the coast of New South Wales, does it really make sense to put these wind farms? I've got them too on the Hay Plain, and we see them in the far west of New South Wales. And communities are quite happy that they're there. They work well with the constructors and the operators, and it's a win-win. But my message to the government is you have to talk to communities. You have to ask them what they think. You have to be consultative and not just sort of right in right over the top of them, which is exactly what's been happening in Port Stephens. So, you know, those local members of the government need to represent their communities better.
On the subject, you mentioned earlier, our Prime Minister is overseas, or will be heading overseas on Saturday. Mind you, Peter Dutton's in India at the moment for a number of discussions, re-trade, etc. You labelled Penny Wong shortly after the October 7th attacks by Hamas on Israel, when Penny Wong called for restraint in Israel and Gaza. You called that disgraceful. I mean, you have been, though, and in fact, I think you were co-chair of the Parliamentary Friends of Palestine, and you're very much of the opinion, like Peter Dutton, that either Anthony Albanese or Penny Wong should have visited Israel sooner rather than later. You're still of that opinion?
Richard, that call for restraint from Penny Wong came very early in this war, and it was inappropriate because it was effectively saying from day one, you know, she described the situation in a way that was not appropriate given the incredible loss of life, the biggest loss of life for the Jewish people since the Holocaust. But you're right, I have and I remain a firm friend of the Palestinian people, and looking at the events now, it is truly horrific. It's horrific for people on both sides. I wish more people were friends of both the Palestinian people and friends of Israel. Unfortunately, we're seeing, you know, many line up behind one side of the argument or the other, and that's not what the solutions to this peace are all about. But it's really worrying, and like all of your listeners and like everyone across the country, I'm watching in great concern and hoping that the recent interventions by those in the region, including the US, and humanitarian assistance comes to the people who need it. And there is very, very few more innocent lives lost.
Well, some good news. Apparently the 88 Australians trapped in Gaza, well, have been able to make a safe passage through that Rafah crossing into Egypt, which is good news. But you mentioned solution, and I watched with interest a former Israeli Prime Minister on 7:30 last night being interviewed by Sarah Ferguson. He said the only solution is the two-state solution. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. And it's been the solution that's been on the table for many, many years, because both the Palestinians and the Israelis deserve to live behind secure borders. But what unfortunately we saw on October the 7th was borders that were not secure, and the resulting carnage and the resulting deaths on both sides have been truly awful. And I know that those who have visited the region on many occasions, as I have, would really be feeling it. And I speak to members of the Jewish community in Sydney who are genuinely concerned for their safety. I speak to Palestinian friends who are concerned about the future of their people with a homeland of their own in the region. So what my message is to all Australians is that we are in a country where you should be free to practice your faith, where tolerance is the first and foremost value when it comes to those multicultural relationships, and we have to remember that.
Yeah, well, there has been a rise in anti-Semitism around the world, and there have been examples of that here in Australia, which is obviously a concern.
A terrible concern, and if you talk to people who feel that they can't show the symbols of their faith when they walk around the streets, you know, that's not good. That's not good in Australia. I mean, this is something that we should be head and shoulders above almost all of the rest of the world. And it is time to consider what those values are when you're feeling as distressed as some people might be at this point in time.
I mentioned I'd read a story earlier in the week at Ningen. There's a real shortage of nurses. There's a shortage of nurses around the country. Do you think it's an unreal expectation, the mandate from the federal government? I mean, it was supposed to come in force in July that all, and you're a former aged care minister, that all residential aged care must have access to registered nurses 24/7. Do you think really that that's a realistic expectation or a long way off over the horizon?
Well, it brought forward the recommendations of the Royal Commission, and that was unfortunate, Richard, because what I've seen in my own electorate is aged care services closed down as a result, or forecast closures. Because if you simply can't get the RN to be on call 24 hours a day and there's no alternative, you often feel that you don't have any option but to close. So without naming the location, I spoke to one regional aged care service on the Murray River, and they'll be asking the other services in the region to take their residents, and they'll be closing. Now, that's not the answer. We want aged care to totally be focused on the residents, to improve along the lines of the recommendations from the Royal Commission, but not necessarily to jump ahead of those recommendations. And certainly for the minister to understand the impact on every single service. Because if you've got a small community-led organisation, doesn't have the ability that some of these, you know, bigger outfits in the city do, but its heart and soul is in the country and the community, and I don't want to see those aged care places closed.
On a much lighter note, the Australian Hotels Association presented their awards on Wednesday night at Randwick Racecourse. And the main one for Schnitty's, for the Parmigiana, went to the Country Hotel, or the Country Club Hotel. Is it pronounced Tullibuck?
Tullibuck, yes. Yes. It's actually... goodness, I hadn't caught up on that.
No.
I'm glad you told me.
I'll
be calling by.
Well, I was going to ask if you tried the Schnitty at the Country Club Hotel at Tullibuck, which is in your electorate. That's on the Murray River, isn't it?
It is. It's just literally right on the border. Yeah. And it's a great place. It's about half an hour south of Balranald, and it's got a great hotel that you see the minute you cross the bridge. So if you haven't been to Tullibuck, make sure you visit.
The Country Club Hotel for apparently the best schnitty in Australia, so there you go. Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much for that, and enjoy your time in the Hunter region, Susan.
It's a pleasure, Richard. Thank you.
Susan Lee, who's the acting opposition leader in the absence of Peter Dutton, who's in India at the moment.